lady that was working as a missionary in Jamaica, and she worked there for 12 months. And unbeknownst to her, on the other side of the street, a man she never spoke to was a Hindu. At the end of her living there 1 year, that man became a Christian. But he made the statement, if Christianity can make anyone live like that, then it must be the one true religion. However, if she would have said one word amiss, or one deed undone, I would have stayed a Hindu. We turn into Matthew chapter 5, if you would, in your Bibles. Matthew chapter 5. I want us to understand, as we begin our study this morning, and appreciate the power of influence that we possess. We'll talk about the power of influence that is unique as a Christian, but in and of itself, no matter who you are, no matter what situation you may find yourself in, you're going to leave an influence behind. And that influence and your ability to influence others is powerful. Read with me, if you will, beginning in Matthew chapter 5, verse 13. Jesus speaking there says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lampstand and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Jesus here is speaking to his disciples. Many people are going to consist of the church and the kingdom that he is seeking to establish. And he wants them to understand that they as Christians are going to have a very powerful influence on the world. And so as he tries to communicate to them the influence that they're going to possess, he uses these two analogies. He says that you as Christians are going to be salt and light. Now I can speak, and sometimes we just take these things for granted, don't we? And Whitney and I, whenever we were dating, we used to do a lot of things. It's like all we ever do is stay at home now. That's how married life kind of changes things, and if having a family changes things. But when we were young and dating, we were able to go, and we were able to do a lot of things. And I remember going once up to Northwest Arkansas and going caving at Devil's Den. And you're there climbing through those caverns, and you have your headlamp on, and as you're climbing through those, you have that on so you can see the bats and know not where to put your hand. And so you could successfully make it through those caves. I remember a couple times, though, as we were caving in that area, that just to see how dark it truly was down in those caverns, we would turn our lights out. And it was so dark you couldn't see your hands in front of your face. That's what it means, pitch dark. And you understand the power that darkness has, but you bring just a little bit of light into that scenario. Think of the illumination that it brings. And as Jesus is trying to impress upon people the power of their influence, he uses salt, he uses light. The implication that he is making, we as Christians are going to make an impression on others. And to the end, ultimately, that is, he says in verse 16, not that they give us glory, not that they pat us on the back and say, oh, you're such a good person, but so that our God is given glory, so that God is glorified. You know, as individuals, influence is something that we all possess. I'm turning to John chapter 3, looking at verses 19 and 20. However, being a Christian places us under the microscope of the world. All people are going to possess influence, but friends, whenever you become a Christian, whenever you make that decision to follow after Jesus Christ and take on his cloak and his mantle and become his disciple, you're going to receive a completely different influence, and you're going to be under the microscope of the world. Read verses 19 and 20 with me of John chapter 3. This is the condemnation, that the light has come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone practicing evil hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his deeds should be exposed. Now you stop and think about for a minute how being a Christian is going to place you under a unique microscope. Think of the Duggar family. Think of the world's reaction to the atrocities that were committed by one of the individuals in that family. You know, they were put up on a pedestal. They were known for their good morals and their good behavior and their faith and their adherence to God's word and their attempt to be like Jesus. But yet, whenever that one individual in that family made that mistake, regardless of how gross that atrocity might have been, remember how the world scoffed, how the world laughed? That was a victory for Satan right there, because the world as a whole, they viewed that family under that light of being a Christian. They were happy to see the shame that brought on that family. And it can occur on a smaller scale too. People people watch us because they know we're Christians. They look at us. They have us under that microscope waiting for us to fall. Why? Because as John says right here, this is the condemnation of the world. The light has come into the world. We as Christians are be the light. But the darkness, those who don't follow Jesus, those who want nothing to do with God or religion or faith and want to live their life selfishly, they hate the light. And so whenever that light flickers just a little bit, that gives them a reason to rejoice. Understand, as a Christian, you're going to be placed under the microscope of the world. And that's why Peter gives this admonition in 1 Peter chapter 2, in verses 11 and 12. His words here are interesting. I wish we would think about this, and I wish we would bear this in mind as we live our life day to day. Maybe you can keep this now in your mind as you go out of the world, as Sunday comes to a close and you're no longer with your brothers and sisters who can encourage you and build you up and help you stay on the straight path. Keep these things in mind when you go to work, when you go to school. Look at what Peter says to the Christians there. He says, "Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation." It's interesting to consider, as Peter makes this statement here, he introduces and speaks to them as beloved, and he says, "I beg of you." That's an interesting word. The Greek word there is parakaleo, and it means simply to admonish, to invoke, to exhort, to implore, to beg. Peter here is making a very strong proclamation that he wants these Christians that he is speaking to give very close adherence to. He's trying to impress upon them the importance of living life as a Christian, not allowing your light to flicker, living faithfully before God. And so he makes this plea. Perhaps he could have done like Paul, and he could have said, "I charge you with my authority as an apostle, live your life right among the Gentiles." But he approaches to their love, he appeals to their love, and he says, "Brethren, I beg you, give consideration to how you live your life." Verse 12 says, "Having your conduct dealt honorable among the Gentiles." Now, why do you think he would make that statement there? People in the world. Why do you think he would say to these Christians, "Your conduct among people in the world needs to be honorable"? Because as we said, people in the world are going to look at our life. They're going to place us under a microscope. They're going to wait for us to make a mistake and wait for us to fall. And so Peter begs the Christians he's writing to, "Let your conduct among the world, among the Gentiles, be honorable. So that whenever they try to say something about you, whenever they try to point out your mistakes, you don't give them that opportunity. You don't allow your light to flicker. But rather, when they see your good works, finding no condemnation within you, that they give God glory." That's his appeal to them, because he understands, as I want to impress upon you this morning, that influence is a very powerful thing. Your conduct is to be different because they are going to speak against you. We want to look at a very specific application of what we're going to study this morning. Now, for some, I understand that this is going to be more relevant than it is for others. But don't tune out just because the things in the application that we're looking at this morning may not apply specifically to you. Because no matter what relationship you're going to be in, the things that we're going to look at this morning, the things that we're going to apply regarding our relationships with the world this morning, are principles that can be applied, and we're going to make the specific application of the Christian and social media, but they can be applied to any relationship that we may have. Relationships at work, relationships with family, relationships to a friend, and the principles that we're going to examine and apply here to this particular instance of Christian and social media, they're technically to govern our life as a whole and all relationships that we may find ourselves in. Now, for those of you who don't know what this is, this definition may not do you a lot of good. For those of you who know what social media is, you probably don't need it defined. But here it is anyway. Social media is a website or an application that allows users to create and share content or to participate in social networking. What it is essentially, for those who may not be familiar with this terms, it is a virtual way of communicating and having a relationship with others. And you may wonder, if you don't use it, well, what's the point in this? I'm still trying to figure that out myself. But I want you to understand that social media has a very strong impact on a person's life. And in the life of most people, it is prevalent. Here's some statistics for you, and these were actually taken from 2014. As time progresses, no doubt these statistics increase. But of 71 online adults that use the internet, 71% were involved with Facebook. I looked at Facebook's information that they provide to the general public. As of August 2015, get this, 1.18 billion people are active users on Facebook. That's almost a sixth of the world's population. A lot of people use it. A lot of people in this country use it. A lot of people in this congregation use it. And you can see there the statistics that I also provided. 23% of adults use Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, LinkedIn. All of these are means of establishing and communicating and having a relationship with people that is virtual. Now give consideration here to this chart for just a moment as we seek to make a point. This chart right here shows for us the percentage of people that are involved in social networking, and I think that this is regarding all social networking, but 30%, now I find this interesting, 30% of middle school students, that's grades 6 to 8, 30% have a Facebook account or use some sort of social media. That's really not that large of a number, but we're talking about young kids. One out of every three kids just about has a Facebook account or social media of some type. 87%, and you can see that orange line that's drawn there, 87% of high school students, 5 out of every 6, have a Facebook account. 90% of adults, 19 to 29, use Facebook, and you can see that the growing trend as age increases, less and less people use Facebook or social networking, but I found it interesting that even those 65 and older, 46%, almost 1 of every 2, has a Facebook account. So the point of looking at all of this data, the way that we want to tie this in, is to understand and to appreciate that it's very relevant in our life, that a lot of people use it, and you tie that in the 2 points that we want to make, to one, that the majority of people in some degree are involved in social networking, and two, there's a lot of time that's given to this particular outlet of communication and this particular outlet of relationship. And you may wonder, well, where does the Bible tie into all of this? What is Facebook and the Bible? Those are two completely different things from two completely different eras. Where does the Bible tie into this? Give consideration, since so many people are involved, since so much time is given to social networking, and since we can see and we can understand the influence that we as individuals possess and that we as Christians have, we need to look at how we communicate our relationship with others in regards to social media. We need to look at the Bible and examine some of its biblical principles that should be applied to how we go about communicating and handling ourselves regarding social media. The first thing we need to keep in mind, and as I say, this is going to govern no matter what relationship we may be in, whether it be social networking, whether it be face-to-face friendships, whatever it may be, these should govern, or principles that should govern our life and how we relate to other people. Paul makes a statement in Colossians chapter 4, verse 5 that's interesting. And this is the first thing that we want to take and we want to apply to our social media life, our social life using social media. Paul says in Colossians 4, 5, walk in wisdom toward those who are outside. Paul's writing this statement to the church of Colossae, and he commands them to walk in wisdom toward those who are outside. To walk is to describe one's manner of life, how you live, how you conduct yourself among the world. That's what he's essentially saying, is when you're out in the world and you're around other people, you need to walk in wisdom. Why? Because the influence that you leave behind and the impression that you're going to leave them with is significant and is important. And so you're to use wisdom when you interact among people of the world. Now, it's important for us not to just get caught up in an I mentality. I think we can have a tendency to do that. It's not just important for us to be like Christ for ourselves. Now, that is important. It is important, but it's not solely for ourselves. And we sometimes think, well, I need to be Christ-like so that I can be found in Christ, so that I can enjoy the blessings of being in Christ, so I can be pleasing to God. Now, as important as that is, that's only one side of the coin that Paul mentioned here. And the other side of the coin is, it's important for me to do the right thing, and it's important for me to conduct myself in wisdom, not just so that I can be found properly in Christ, but so that others can see, and those who are not Christians that are watching me can understand who I am at my core. Because they're going to judge me. They're not only going to judge us, but they're going to judge our cause off of the way that we live. Not only am I spearing my name if I proclaim to be a Christian and I go out on the weekend, engage in debauchery and sexual immorality, not only am I smearing my name, my reputation, I'm also smearing the reputation of Christ. Our behavior is going to reflect on God and on His church. And for that reason, Paul says there to walk wisely. We need to be aware that our use of social media is going to have an impact on others. Let me show you the degree to which this can be. And young people, you may be particularly interested in this. You know, what companies nowadays do whenever they determine people that they want to bring in for interviews? What many of them will do prior to ever getting a call, you may put in an application, and they have a screening method. What they're going to do, and Teresa, you're nodding because you've probably been involved in this before, or at least you're aware of this. But many companies are looking at your Facebook page, your social media. They're looking at how you conduct yourself. What are the things you're publicizing? What are the things you're talking about? What kind of language is coming out of your mouth? Are you going to be a good professional employee and representative for them? Or are you going to be someone that's going to work against their cause, or someone that's not going to give everything they've got to the job that they have? That's what companies are doing, because they understand that you can gauge what's at a person's core based off what you see and the way that they communicate to others using social media. If they were to go to your Facebook page, someone that you never met, and we probably all got Facebook friends, or we follow people on Twitter, whatever form of social media you may use, you probably got friends that you actually have never met. I know I've got several people that I follow and several people that I'm friends with that I've never met. Now, if said person who you've never met, maybe they go to the same school as you, maybe they work at the same place as you, but you've actually not had a face-to-face with them, if said person were to go to your page, they were to look at it, they were to look at your pictures, they were to read your statuses, they're going to examine and place you under that microscope, and they're going to look at how you live your life. And they know that you're a Christian. And then you go and you invite said person to church, what would they say after looking at your page? And after seeing what is at the core and what weighs on your heart and the person that you are, is that going to reinforce in their mind why they would already want to say no? Are you going to give them a reason to say no based off of the things that you are advertising on your social media? Consider, walk in wisdom toward those who are outside. Before you post, before you upload, before you comment, before you share, ask, is this walking wisely toward those who are outside? Is this going to affect my ability to influence people who I might one day want to ask to have a religious conversation, or come visit my church with me, or sit down and have a Bible study? Or is this going to make me look like a hypocrite if I try to have one of those conversations with them? Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside. Secondly, govern your social media with holiness. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 14 through 16. You know, we speak of holiness, and oftentimes whenever we speak of that particular characteristic or that particular attribute, we don't speak of it in relation to ourselves. What we do is we speak of it in relation to God. God is holy. Now, that's not something that I can ever attain, since that's what God is. That's nothing I can ever accomplish or nothing I could ever implement into my life. Let's read here what Peter says to the Christians that he was writing to, that we previously looked at. In verse 14, 1 Peter 1, as obedient children, not conforming yourself to the former lusts, as in your ignorance. Listen to this. But as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. Because it is written, be holy, for I am holy. Holiness is blamelessness. It is to be consecrated. It is to be set apart. And the word goes back to the way that the children of Israel worshiped God in the Old Testament. There were certain elements and certain things that were involved in the way that they worshiped God under the old law. Take, for instance, the lampstand. They would have within the tabernacle this holy lampstand that was plated in gold. Now, what separated that lampstand from all of the other lampstands that the children of Israel used in their homes and their jobs, etc.? Well, this one was holy. This one was consecrated. It means it was set apart for the use of worship to God. Now, that's what Peter is calling us to be. He's saying we are to be holy. That is, we are to be set apart. We are to be set apart for God's purposes. And notice, Peter doesn't challenge them to say, you really need to be more holy in the way that you're living. He commands them. He speaks to them, and he expects them to fulfill that. This is not simply an invitation. If we've heard and we've answered the call of the gospel, then Peter's speaking to me, and he's speaking to you. And he's not offering a suggestion that you try to straighten out your life. He's telling you, as he who called you is holy, you be holy in the way you live. Now, this doesn't demand sinlessness. That's the expectation. That's the goal. But yet we find ourselves so oftentimes in sin. What it does demand is our best effort, our desire, our fullest in an attempt to live holy before God. So the principles that I would apply to my life and how I interact with others are the same things that I want to apply to how I use my social media as a means for communication. This should be obvious, but yet as I sometimes so often see brothers and sisters, people who are Christians, and as I look at what they're saying and what they're doing and what they're proclaiming to be, there seems to be a disconnect there. And I don't understand why the use of social media, people think that they can be one thing in real life and they proclaim to be something, but yet socially, virtually, they are something completely different than what they are proclaiming to be. It's something completely different than what they actually are. It goes without saying, but people are saying things, sharing pictures, and advocating things that I would not ever suspect that they would do in person. I remember I was over at a preacher's house the other night after a gospel meeting, went over to visit a preacher friend of mine. And we were just visiting, and the topic came up of Facebook. And she's like, "You wouldn't believe what I saw so-and-so share the other day." And it was an image that was very wrong, and that showed someone who was in very little clothing. And this was a preacher that did that. A preacher shared this image. And I don't understand where the disconnect may be, where people think if they do something virtually, then it's somehow disassociated from who they are and their reputation and what's in their heart. And that's just a complete fallacy and a complete amount of foolishness. But for someone to do that, and as I consider that this isn't an isolated cause, as I frequently see my brothers and sisters who are proclaiming, perhaps, to live holy, but yet the things that they're sharing and the things that they're giving approval to are not in the first like that, I can only assume that they must disassociate who they are virtually with who they are as a person, which you can't disassociate the two. The two are one and the same. The way you represent yourself virtually is who you are at your core. And so if you didn't know that, please give consideration to that. Or secondly, they're a hypocrite. And they're simply lying about who they are, and they're revealing what's truly in their heart. Proverbs chapter 3, 23, verse 7 says, "As a man thinks in his heart, so is he." And while it may not manifest itself physically, but yet it manifests itself virtually, God says, God knows what's in your heart. And if you share something virtually that you might never say physically, it still proceeds from your heart. And so you're just as guilty of it anyway. And some perhaps act as if it isn't relevant. Well, who I am online, is it really who I am? Well, God knows the secrets of the heart. And God judges the heart. We need to give consideration to those things, and we need to allow holiness to govern our social media. It needs to govern our social media through the words that we say, and these are probably the most two ways that we're going to most make the most impact on others. One is through the things that you say. Let's look at Colossians chapter 4, verse 6. Say, well, weren't we just at Colossians 4? We were just a moment ago. Remember, Paul just gave the admonition to the church at Colossae, walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. That's what he said in verse 5. And look how he says, walking in wisdom toward outsiders is going to manifest itself. Verse 6. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer one another. So right after he talks about walking with wisdom toward those who are outside, he then talks about the speech that you use. I hope none of you are blatantly posting and using profanity on your social media networks. I haven't seen it. I don't think that you would. However, one thing that I've known some people do who will not use blatant profanity on their Facebook sites, one of the things that I have seen that is popular, especially among our young people, is this phrase, OMG. Now, that's in as much an abuse of God's name as it is to actually write those words out. That's what it represents. That's what it stands for. And whenever you use this phrase, although it isn't always as blatant, it has the same meaning. It has the same intent. Using phrases like, oh my gosh, Lord, Jesus, Christ, holy cow, that is taking the name of the Most High and Most Holy God and making it an outlet to express surprise or fear or anger. And this sends the message to others that while we may proclaim to be a Christian on one hand, We don't have the proper reverence for God if we're allowing words like that to come across our virtual means of social networking, and we don't have respect for the very God that we're striving to serve. Paul goes on to say in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29, as he's speaking to the Ephesians there about how they're to govern their tongue, he says, "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers." So the next time you get ready to post, the next time you get ready to make a comment, the next time you get ready to share something, ask yourself this question. This is a good baseline question to ask whenever you're going to say anything, whether it be in real life or in social media. Is what I'm saying edifying? Does it build someone up? Or does it tear others down? Is what I'm saying imparting grace to the people that hear it or that read it? You know, the same things that govern my tongue are the things that should govern the way that I communicate with others, the things that I promote on social media. And then another application of that I very blatantly see. James Clinton had my notes, I promise, on Wednesday night whenever he was teaching this class. And look at 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 17. And this is an application that I think many in God's kingdom, many a man and woman that I've had great respect for and great appreciation for through their influence, have violated what we're going to look at here in the form of social media. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 17. Look at what Peter says. Speaking to the people, and he's told them that you are to submit yourself to the ordinances of man, you're to obey the government, honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. What I've so oftentimes seen Christians doing that I have the utmost respect for is to speak evil of our leaders. I've seen brethren, usually it's adults, make rude and disrespectful comments about the leaders of our country. Now, personally, I'm not that excited about the leadership within this country. However, just because I'm not excited and just because I may disagree with it, that does not give me the right, that does not give me the ability to speak out against them in a way that is evil. They are there because God has allowed them to be there. That's all there is to it. So look at Acts chapter 23. The command is very simply, not to speak evil of them. It's not to speak evil of them if you agree with everything that they're doing. It's not to not speak evil of them if they do something that you don't like. Let's look at Acts chapter 23, an account there where we've got Paul, who's standing before the chief priests. As he's standing there, there's some things that transpire. Let's read about those in Acts 23. Verse 2, we see the high priest commanded those who stood with Paul to strike him on the mouth. Paul had made a statement. He didn't like it. So the high priest says, you know, smack him on the mouth. And Paul said to him, "God will strike you, you whitewashed wall. For you sit to judge me according to the law, and do not command me to be struck contrary to the law." And those who stood by said, "Do you not revile God's high priest?" Now look at what Paul says. He's made a statement, a harsh statement to this man who is high priest. This man who has just commanded that he be hit for no reason at all, other than the fact he didn't like what he said. Look what Paul says in verse 5. Paul said, "I did not know, brethren, that he is a high priest. For it is written, you shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people." Seems to me that Paul did not understand who he was speaking to. And had he known who he was speaking to, he wouldn't have said what he said, despite the fact that it was true, despite the fact that the man perhaps deserved a rebuke. This man was a leader. Paul says, "I didn't know he was a leader. The Bible says you're not supposed to speak evil of your leaders. I wouldn't have done it if I'd have known." Well, it's very simple. You know, we may not like who's in office. We may not agree with the things that are taking place. Now, we can speak out against the issues. That doesn't mean we have to hold our tongue and just keep our heads down and do everything and submit ourselves 100% with the things that are wrong. We can speak out against those issues. We can point out the moral inconsistencies of our nation's leaders, but we cannot speak evil of them. It's just as simple as that. But yet I see brethren time and time again using their social media to speak evil of those who are in office. So be careful. Give consideration to the way that you use your voice in regard to social media, and outside as well. Outside as well. And secondly, the things that you say are going to have that significant impact, and also the manner in which you portray yourself. There's a little phrase that sometimes people use, well, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I think that regarding social media, this is sometimes how Christians think, and I don't understand why they process their minds that way. I know that so-and-so, brother so-and-so is going on vacation, and I know that brother so-and-so and their kids are going to the beach. Now, what I don't understand is why brother so-and-so pictures of himself running around with our shirts on, running around in two-piece bikinis. I can't understand that. I can't understand why they, at this location here among the brethren, would never dress in such a manner, but when they go off, they think that they can do whatever they want, and then they can upload and share those with the world. I can't give you a good answer to why people think that way. But I know that Christians have no business dressing like that, and they definitely have no business sharing it across social media with other people. Pictures that are put on social media are public to everyone. They're able to see all of those things. We need to, as Christians, have in mind, I'm not going to reflect the attitude that I want to look like the world, but rather we need to give thought to the pictures and the way that we manifest ourselves and portray ourselves in our life. Peter here, as he's talking about beauty, he gives a rebuke to those who are attempting to beautify themselves in a physical outward means, but he demonstrates true beauty, 1 Peter 3:4, where he says, you don't do that by putting on the gold and the earrings and the jewelry and wearing the fine apparel. This is where true beauty is at, according to Peter. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit. Listen to who he says is impressed by this beauty, which is very precious in the sight of God. Beauty isn't accomplished by revealing as much skin as possible. Yes, the world may look at it and the world may say, if you're beautiful, then you should share that with everybody else so they can appreciate it. But that's what Peter, not what Peter says is true beauty. Peter says true beauty is found in a gentle and quiet spirit. What's on the outside is what is reflected of what's on the inside. There's nothing, remember our command, govern your social media with holiness. There's nothing holy about exposing your body for everyone to see. If you're married, your body is holy. It's set apart for your spouse and them alone. If you're unmarried, your body is set apart for who you are one day going to marry, who you are going to give your life to, and it's not for everyone to be able to see. If you don't dress like the world, you're not going to have to worry about one day someone saying something to you about dressing immodestly or dressing inappropriately. Govern your social media with holiness. Be cautious of giving approval to evil. Let's look at Romans chapter 1 real quick. Romans chapter 1. We read this passage here, verses 28 through 32. And we read all kind of evil things. Sexually immoral, deceitful, evil-minded, murderers, backbiters, haters of God, violent. We look at all of these terrible things, and we rightly say, I would never do such things. And we don't go around doing those things. Those things are easy for us to avoid. They're easy for us to prevent. Paul's given this list of big sins, and he says, those who do these things, brethren, they're worthy of death. Now, all sin is deserving of death. Paul says that in Romans chapter 6:23, the wages of sin is death. That's the price for sin. That's what is deserved, the deserved consequence of sin. But the thing that Paul is mentioning here in Romans chapter 1:28-32, well, these are particularly abhorrent sins. Sexually immoral, murderers, evil-minded, malicious, haters of God. Paul's saying people to do these things are deserved of being punished. You and I would never think about doing these things, would we? These are such big, awful things that are wrong. But notice the last part of verse 32, the second phrase that Paul uses, after he says those who practice such things are deserving of death. He goes on to say, not only those who do the same, but also approve of those who practice it. Now that relates to me and you in a whole different way. Yes, I may not go out and actually do these things. I may not tell a dirty joke, but would I laugh at one? I may not go to a party to get drunk, but would I go to a party to hang out, to stand around? You remember the implication that's given in Acts chapter 8, whenever Stephen is stoned, he preaches a sermon, he makes the Jews mad, they take the stones, they kill him. You remember what's done, Saul, as he's involved with that? He's holding the coats of those that stoned Stephen. Now the implication there is that while Paul wasn't the one that actually took up stones and killed that man, he held the coats of those who did. The implication being, by giving approval to those who did that, he was just as guilty as the ones that did. That's where we need to be careful. Not necessarily of committing any of these terrible things on this list. Not necessarily of sinning and transgressing ourselves, but giving approval to sin and giving approval to things that are wrong. And the relevance for this in social media, all of the communication that we have online, it's exposed for everyone to see. It's nothing that is private. Any comment you make, any picture you post, any conversation you have is going to be available to everyone. And since everything is exposed, I can see whenever you like something on Facebook. I can see when you share it. I can see when you make comments. And so my advice is simply this, to be careful what you as Christians promote. When you share or retweet or whatever it is you're doing, you're putting your stamp of approval on something. You're saying, I found this entertaining, interesting, whatever it may be. Everybody else needs to look at it. I've seen preachers like and share videos that used very blatant profanity. Now, I know these preachers. They're good men. They never, ever in their life say anything that was coming forth like the words in that video. But yet, when they like it, when they share it, what are they doing? They're giving their very approval to those same things. No, they may never say them, but they're putting their stamp of approval on them. I once saw a preacher make a statement and posted this video and said, you need to watch this video. It's got a few words at the beginning, and I'm thinking, what would the members of his congregation think with him putting his stamp of approval on this foul language? What would his elders think of him demonstrating and acknowledging and sharing this foul language video? What would the people that he's trying to have a positive influence on and maybe trying to study and convert think if they saw that he is sharing videos like this? Well, number one, we need to guard our influence because, first and foremost, I don't need to be involved with any of that. But secondly, my ability to influence others is going to be severely impaired and impacted when they see the things that I'm showing and sharing with others and they associate the foul language or the immodest dress or whatever it is, they associate that with me. And that's why Paul makes the statement, not only those who do these things are guilty and are deserving of death, but also those that give approval to. They're just as wrong. One of the elders at the congregation I used to attend, he was a Facebook police. And Buster here, I put Buster on Facebook police duty, because he seems like the kind of guy that would get this job done. But what he would do is, he would look at the members' walls, and he would look at what kind of content was there. He'd look at the language that they're using. He'd look at the language that people are using. And I remember him coming up to me once, and it was after services, and he says, hey, you need to go look at your Facebook wall. So-and-so said something that doesn't need to be on there. And you may think, well, that's kind of nosy, and what business is it of yours? Well, as a flock or as an elder of that congregation, it's his job to help me promote myself in such a way that I'm going to have a positive influence on others. And if there's language on my wall and there's pictures on my wall that I'm advocating, then I'm wrong and I need to take those things down. And I very much appreciated him doing that. But the damage is done by your ability to influence is really where we need to be careful. You don't want to be the reason that someone chooses not to inquire more about your Lord because of the things that they see on your wall. And you need to give consideration to the damage that's being done to your brother. Romans chapter 14 and verse 13, Paul says, let's make sure that we do this, that we do not become a stumbling block to others. I can speak personally, and I imagine that you can too. It is discouraging for me to see a brother or sister giving approval to things that are sinful. When I see a word that come out that I know someone shouldn't use, or a picture that they shouldn't upload, or I see them putting their stamp of approval on foul mouth videos, that gets me down. That discourages me. I remember there was a woman that I looked up to frequently because she was always sharing, hey, I'm at church, I'm inviting other people, come worship God with us. And then right after she posted one of those messages, she made another status update and she said, you know, I'm interested in some television shows and I want some recommendations of some television shows that are dark in nature. You know, whether it be violent or drugs or alcohol or sexual immorality. She's asking for recommendations and I just couldn't let that go. I had to go to her and I had to say, hey, I just saw what you're advocating about your church, and now you're going to go and you're going to publicize something like that? I can't help but think, what kind of influence is that going to have on those she's trying to help for the better when they see the double life that's there? Be cautious, brethren, of the things that you give approval to. And lastly, use your social media influence for good. Use your social media influence for good. To say that social media, and perhaps there might be some who would say, well, that's why I'm not involved in all of that stuff, because it's evil. Well, to say that social media is evil is essentially equivalent to saying, well, guns are guilty of killing people. They're simply a tool. They can be used for evil, yes, but they can be used for good as well. All of these things are nothing more than tools, and it's how we use them as individuals that make them appear as evil or make them appear as good. Well, it's wonderful being able to connect to people that are geographically so far away that I may never see again in my life, or people that I've met, brethren that I've met at other congregations and I was introduced to, and to be able to communicate with them and keep up with them and find out what's going on in their life and rejoice in the good things that are taking place and encourage them when times are hard. That's truly a blessing, and that's what social media allows you to do. I've been able to see goodness and kindness and faithfulness through the interaction and communication that I have with many of my brothers and sisters. And I've been encouraged by the things that I've seen, and I've learned a lot by the things that I've seen. You know, it can be a tool for good, and that's the end to which I would encourage you. Use your social media for good. Now, it's not wrong to tell the world, if you want to, that you're going to a football game on Friday night. Or if you want to take pictures of your vacation and share them with others, there's nothing wrong with that. But you have an outlet, an opportunity to reach others in a positive way. Use it to support good causes. Whenever we went to the Ashdown football game a couple weeks ago, they had a prayer that was there. And there had been a request by someone, we don't know, I don't know who it was, there had been a request about these prayers that were being made saying, well, you're not supposed to do that, that offends me. And so the faculty said, okay, well, we can't have that, someone finds that offensive. But what the students did was the students got together and the students made the decision, we want prayer before our game, we're going to have a prayer before our game. And so they got out there and they had their prayer. And the students were the ones that incorporated that, and I've seen articles floating around on Facebook where people are putting their stamp of approval on that good thing. And they're showing others where they stand. And they're standing for prayer in school and for good moral things like that. And those are good ways that you can use your social media. Because it was an encouragement to me as I came across that on Facebook. You know, there was another situation that occurred. There was this good Christian woman. Family, I think, had 5 children. And she had this certain kind of brain tumor and needed medical assistance. And I think it was going to be in the neighborhood of somewhere around $90,000. And her husband had exhausted all of the money that they had in savings, and they exhausted everything that they had in an attempt to try to help her get better. They had no outlet left. And she was just going to have to essentially suffer the effects of this brain tumor. But word got around. Some Christian went and set up an account where people could make donations to help them with the medical charges that they were needing to pay for their bills and that work that needed to be done. And it took 2 days for Christians to support her and raise $90,000 so that she might have the medical work that she needed done. And that was done through social media. It can be a good thing. Use your social media to support good causes. And lastly, use it to share your faith. We reached, you may not know this, I manage the church's Facebook site, but we were able to reach 590 people through sharing our gospel media flyer that ended up getting canceled. But we were able to, we did reschedule that, by the way, for January, so you're going to see it again. But we were able to reach 590 people through the sharing of that, and I know I shared it, and multiple others here shared it to encourage people to come to our meeting. That's a great way to reach people. Now, you may not be doing nothing than planting a seed, but it's still an opportunity, and it's providing an opportunity for others to come to know more about God. And lastly, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10:31, whatever you do, whether you eat or drink, do all to the glory of God. Use your social media to bring God glory. And it's a very effective means of doing so. Really didn't know where to fit this in, but it's a message I feel very strongly needs to be passed on to moms and dads. You know, if you're here, please give consideration to this. And to young people, I'm sorry if you disagree with me. Many of years ago, I would have done so. Mom and dad, know what your kids are posting, what they're uploading, what they're sharing, what they're saying. Have access to their accounts. Give consideration to that. I saw one girl make a statement once that she was a Christian. So-and-so came on asking her about something or another. And she said, well, I can't say on here because my mom is always creeping on my wall. And I thought, well, that's her responsibility as your parent to govern the things that you're doing, the things you're saying, the things you're sharing with others. That's her responsibility, and parents, that's your responsibility. Don't just send them off with a computer or a phone and let them do whatever they want. It's your job to instruct and to bring them up and to nurture them in the admonition of the Lord. You need to know what's going on with your children's Facebook and social media. And this prayer, my prayer this morning, you'll give consideration to the things that we've looked at, to the things that we've examined. Because social media is a great way to be a very good influence on the life of many people. But on the other side, on the flip side, it can be a stumbling block as well. It all depends on how you use it. Give consideration to the words that come out of your mouth, and to the things that you promote, and the way that you show yourself, your person, your body. If you've been careless, consider. Make a correction. Everybody's going to go home and check their Facebook walls and make sure there's nothing bad on there, because when the preacher gets on there looking, they're going to make sure to have that down. But give true consideration to these things. Be careful. Govern your social media with holiness. Be cautious of the things that you give approval to. Watch what comes out of your mouth. Watch the things that you like and that you share. And if you've been guilty of doing something that you shouldn't, promoting something you shouldn't, make that correction. First and foremost, take it down. Secondly, make it right with God. Make it right with your brethren. If you're here this morning and you need to respond to the invitation in any way, through our help and our assistance, we can encourage you as you strive to serve God. Or if you need to take that first step in service to God this morning by obeying, by submitting by faith to His commands, to be buried in baptism so you might have your sins forgiven, you can take that step as well. We can encourage you in your endeavor to serve God more faithfully. If anyone needs to respond to the invitation, please do so at this time as we stand and as we sing.